In the next hour of Midday, we get the nursing perspective on Ebola. Two nurses who treated the Liberian man who died in Dallas have also contracted the virus. One of them, Nina Pham, is being treated in Maryland at the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda. Relatives of the other nurse, Amber Vinson, say they're troubled by negative public comments and press coverage suggesting that she was careless. Vinson is undergoing treatment in a special isolation unit in Atlanta. Two members of the faculty of the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing join us this hour to talk about nursing on the front lines of infectious disease and to take a measure of lessons that should be learned from the arrival of Ebola in the U.S. That's next on Midday after the news from NPR. And welcome back to Midday, everyone. Our second hour, Dan Roderick's here. Thanks again for joining us. In West Africa, nurses and nurses' aides have been at the front lines of the Ebola outbreak. And the first two Americans to contract the deadly disease in the United States were the Dallas nurses who treated Thomas Eric Duncan, the Liberian man who died at Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital on October 8th. On Sunday, Mr. Duncan's fiancée, Louise Tro, issued a statement through her pastor that the family is grateful for their own health, but is mourning Mr. Duncan and aching for the two nurses who contracted Ebola after caring for him. One of those nurses, Nina Pham, is being treated in Maryland at the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda. The other nurse, Amber Vinson, is undergoing treatment in a special isolation unit in Atlanta. Over the weekend, members of her family, Vinson's family, said they are troubled by negative public comments and press coverage suggesting that she had been careless. In this hour of Midday, two members of the faculty of the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing join us to talk about nursing on the front lines of infectious disease and to take a measure of lessons that should be learned from the arrival of Ebola in the United States. In a little while, we'll connect with Cinda Rushton, a professor of clinical ethics, who will speak to us about some of the challenges nurses and clinicians face on the front lines of infectious disease and how they assess risk and balance risk with professional responsibility. You're welcome to join us this hour if you have comments or questions specifically about nursing in these situations. 410-662-8780 is the number for live talk here on Midday. Our toll-free long-distance number, good from anywhere in the country, 866-661-9309. We can also take emails and read your comments or questions on the air. That address is midday@wypr.org. We start the conversation this hour with Tenor Goodwin Venema, associate professor at the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing and the Center for Refugee and Disaster Response at the Bloomberg School for Public Health, also at Johns Hopkins, of course. She's a senior scientist on the American Red Cross's National Scientific Advisory Council and joins us here on Midday by phone. Nice to have you with us, Professor Venema.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
This is my first chance to speak with you and for our listeners to hear from you, given what's happened in the last couple of weeks with the arrival of Ebola in the United States with Mr. Duncan and then the contracting of the disease by his nurses and all the questions that have been raised about protocols and such at down in Dallas. I just wonder what your reflections are on this as of now, you know, a couple of weeks into this, having this disease in the United States.
Sure. Well, certainly, I think the one thing that's crystal clear for everyone is that it's a serious situation, and I do believe that all of the hospitals, the CDC, and all of the various agencies are really paying very close attention to this, and we're all waiting for the CDC's release of the updated guidelines for the use of personal protective equipment by healthcare workers caring for patients with Ebola. But I think, you know, there's some clear lessons that have come out of this. I think, obviously, it's completely unacceptable for any nurse or any healthcare worker or hospital employee to contract a disease. We are working across the nation quite hard to prevent hospital-acquired infections. And I do believe that there will be some valuable lessons that will come out of the situation in Texas in terms of once an investigation has been conducted and we can learn what went wrong. You know, what were the communication lapses initially that Mr. Duncan's previous travel to West Africa had not been passed along to the appropriate healthcare team members? What happened that allowed these nurses to contract, you know, this very deadly disease? So I think, you know, it is a situation that is evolving. We have never had an outbreak of Ebola in the United States before. Clearly, it's caused a lot of fear, a lot of panic, and perhaps caught some people off guard.
You know, your area of expertise, where you've worked, is in disaster nursing, public health emergency preparations, being ready for these things. And I wonder if you could share some insight into how this works in the United States between the Centers for Disease Control, the National Institutes of Health, or who's ever sending out messages to hospitals with regard to, say, an infectious disease, warnings. Is that a good, do you think it's a good communication system?
Well, I think we have a number of different organizations that are at play here when it comes to the nation's public health. We obviously have the Centers for Disaster or Centers for Disease Prevention and Control, which in the United States is our gold standard agency for issuing guidance on the management of different risks to the health of the public. But the CDC is a federal agency, and we live in a nation of states, and health law is state health law, and so is dependent upon the State Department of Health of where you reside. That being said, all of our nation's hospitals are subject to regulation, most of them under the Joint Commission, which sets standards for hospitals, and as such, most of these hospitals, if not all, under Joint Commission regulation, have emergency operations plans in place. There are very highly developed infection control components to that emergency operations plan and infection control professionals working within each hospital. I think what is happening now is a good thing in that all of the hospitals across the U.S. are revisiting the strength and integrity of these plans to make sure that the existing organizational plan is in full compliance with their state health department guidelines and also with the recommendations that are coming out of the CDC.
You know, recommendations from the CDC or directives or memos, bulletins, however they are presented, at a lot of hospitals, I'm not going to say, but I wonder, at hospitals, are those things taken as seriously as they should be? Are they posted on a bulletin board, but does someone take it more seriously than that, actually conduct drills? What's your general view of that?
You know, it's hard to comment on what all of the nation's hospitals are doing. Certainly, I would not want to say one way or the other. I think, in my perspective, there's certainly a clear opportunity here for hospitals and all healthcare organizations to really look critically at workforce development, to look at their nurses, to look at the other healthcare providers that work within their organization, and really look at what is the education and training that is provided to these nurses on an ongoing basis that includes annual drills so that they can be assured that their healthcare workforce is prepared to participate, that they have the knowledge and the skills to keep themselves safe and also to keep their patients and their patients' families safe when we do have a major outbreak. This A situation that we're experiencing is not without historical precedent. I mean, we saw during the SARS outbreak in Toronto that several nurses succumbed to the disease and died. And again, it was related to improper use of personal protective equipment. We know we will continue to have outbreaks of infectious disease that we need to be prepared for, and we need to, I think, right now heed this wake-up call and this current situation and take advantage of this to really shine a laser focus on the need to make sure that nurses all working nurses, 2.9 million nurses in the United States, have at least a minimum knowledge base and skill set of how to respond appropriately in a major outbreak. That being said, I think there are certainly cadres of nurses working in high-risk areas, in emergency departments, in intensive care units, particularly in some of these higher level one, so to speak, academic medical centers where the Ebola patients are being treated or can be expected to be transferred should there be more patients, that those nurses need even more advanced education and training in the selection of and the proper use of personal protective equipment.
Hmm. Tenor Goodwin-Venema is an associate professor at the School of Nursing of Johns Hopkins University. On that count, is there more training in this area when it comes to nursing and nursing schools, more training in preparation for use of protective gear in times of infectious disease outbreaks?
Well, I think what's become clear is that we're not doing enough, and this, of course, is certainly something that I've been working on my entire career, is to try to work on initiating educational programs and ongoing lifelong learning opportunities so that we can make every nurse a prepared nurse and ensure the safety of our healthcare workforce. I know at Johns Hopkins we have courses in disaster nursing. We're developing some new, more advanced courses on the use of personal protective equipment. I think our nursing schools and our universities across the U.S. Are challenged right now in terms of trying to prepare nurses in a number of different accelerated programs. There's so much content, so much changing science, so much research that today's nurse has to master to enter the workforce and be a competent professional with a good, solid scientific foundation for their nursing practice. And so the addition of new content, more content, as it relates to disaster preparedness, disaster response, public health outbreak management, infection control strategies, these are challenges for schools and colleges of nursing that already have very jam-packed curricula. However, I'm optimistic that we will see more inclusion of this content into schools of nursing curricula, and then also in hospitals with their staff development and lifelong learning programs. I think we've all realized our nurses don't have as current advanced training in the use of personal protective equipment and infection control strategies as we would really like them to have.
There's something I wanted to ask you about. I think it was only last week. Forgive me, I think it was last week because so much has happened on this story in a short period of time. When Dr. Frieden from the Center for Disease Control made the statement that it was believed there had been a breach in protocol causing the transmission of the virus to the first nurse that we learned about, Nina Pham. And then there was criticism of Dr. Frieden for saying that. Nurses associations around the country, spokespersons for those groups said that he was making it seem that the nurse had made a mistake, caused her own infection. What are your thoughts about that? His that statement? Was he just trying to let people know that the infection spread because of a mistake? Do you think it was an innocent comment or a pointed comment made to make a point to the American public? How did you respond to that?
Well, I believe that the CDC and Dr. Frieden's leadership has been stellar through an ongoing, evolving situation. As we discussed when we started our conversation today, you know, this is an evolving situation characterized by a certain high level of ambiguity in terms of identification, detection, isolation, management of these patients, and the development of a broader national strategy to try to contain any further transmission of disease in the U.S. The CDC, I believe, has been on top of the situation from the get-go and has been trying to get to the bottom of some unanswered questions in terms of what did transpire in the Texas hospital. If there was a breach of protocol, I think it's important that we all find out what that breach was and learn from it. Our goal all of us, whether we work at the CDC or at Johns Hopkins or in any small hospital across the U.S., to render the best health care, highest quality patient care that we possibly can, and of course prevent transmission of disease to any individual, healthcare workers included, family members. I mean, we want to get a handle on this situation and be able to say that we are in control of it. So I think, again, it's an ongoing, evolving situation. There are some unanswered questions as to things that have gone well and not gone well, but I think we'll learn from it and can move forward and make sure that those breaches or whatever communication breakdowns there were don't happen again.
Tenor Goodwin Venema from the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing is an internationally recognized expert in disaster nursing and public health emergency prep. She's the winner of the Florence Nightingale Medal of Honor from the International Red Crescent, the highest international award that a nurse can receive, speaking with us about the Ebola outbreak. We'll continue our conversation with her in just a moment and be joined by a colleague from the School of Nursing, Cinda Rushton. Welcome back to Midday. Ebola is not spread through casual contact with someone who has no symptoms of the disease. It is not spread through the air or through water or food in the United States. These are the facts that we get them from the CDC. You can only get the Ebola virus through direct contact with body fluids of a person who is sick with or has died from Ebola, objects contaminated with the virus, infected animals. And lastly, I had these in front of me and I was clicking too fast. But anyway, most of that you've already heard. My question for Tenor Goodwin Venema from the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing, Professor Venema, was, have we overreacted to this? We meaning the media, we meaning the American public. Have we made too much of this, given what science, the best science, knows about how the virus is spread?
Well, I think that's an excellent question, and I guess my immediate response would be to say, first, make no mistake, this is a deadly disease. This is a Category A pathogen, according to the CDC, meaning it is, a highly transmissible and very virulent deadly disease. So it certainly deserves our respect and our attention. I do think that we are perhaps in the media overreacting a bit in the U.S. in terms of the reality of the measurement of the risk of transmission. We are very fortunate that we live in a country with access to such wonderful health care services, no matter what state we live in. And so I'm very confident in our capacity and our ability to contain the spread of Ebola here in the United States. And I think that people need to pay attention and continue to monitor the news waves in terms of where things are going and to make sure that we don't have a sudden increase in a number of patients with Ebola. But honestly, the best thing that people could do right now is to make sure they get their flu shot and to wash their hands on a regular basis.
The last part of that Ebola facts that I wanted to read. Ebola only spreads when people are showing symptoms. A patient must have symptoms to spread the disease to others after 21 days. If an exposed person does not develop symptoms, they will not become sick with Ebola. Last thing, question for you, Professor Venema, is the quote on your bio page at the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing online, "Chance favors the prepared mind," a quote from Louis Pasteur. Could you just talk about that for a moment?
Thank you for mentioning that. I've used that quote probably for 30 years of practice, and it always reminds me that there's no substitute for education and training when it comes to being prepared for any type of healthcare situation, and certainly the types of work that I've done in regards to disaster response or disaster evaluation and public health emergency management. You know, the more we can learn about this, and we will continue to learn from this Ebola outbreak, the more we can use that information to make sure that we're prepared for any other emerging infectious disease outbreak that we may encounter in the future. And I, you know, we have a wonderful national nursing workforce in the U.S. that is very committed to high-level professional practice. We use personal protective equipment every day in our work in terms of universal precautions for the care of our patients. This is a situation that requires a higher level of the use of personal protective equipment to ensure protection and barrier to this disease. And I think that we will use this information and we will come to our next outbreak with a more prepared mind.
Well, thank you for spending some time with us to talk about this today.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me. It was a wonderful opportunity to talk about nursing.
Tanner Goodwin Venema, Associate Professor at the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing and the Center for Refugee and Disaster Response at the Bloomberg School of Public Health, joining us by phone. And now we turn to one of her colleagues, also from the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing, as we continue this conversation about Ebola from the nursing perspective, is Cinda Rushton. Cinda Rushton is the Anne and George L. Bunting Professor of Clinical Ethics, a joint professorship of the Johns Hopkins University's Berman Institute of Bioethics and School of Nursing. And Cinda Rushton also holds an appointment in the School of Medicine, the Department of Pediatrics, and serves as co-chair of the Johns Hopkins Hospital Ethics Committee. She has a specialty here in nursing and ethics and the balancing risk and responsibility in situations like the one we're talking about today. So, Cinda Rushton, thank you for joining us here on Midday.
Thank you, Dan. It's a pleasure.
I just wonder if you reflect a little bit on the events of the last couple of weeks, the arrival of Ebola in the United States, the death of Mr. Duncan, the contracting of the disease by his two nurses, and the behavior of government officials, the approach that was taken here, the handling of this by the CDC. But just wonder, you know, your general comments about this, and particularly as it applies to the nurses in this situation.
So it's very clear, and I really appreciate Dr. Venema's comments in terms of the importance of preparation. It's also true that this is a situation where when fear takes hold, we can really risk losing our moral compass. And it's exactly the time when we are fearful that we need to pause and really take account of the values that really drive our decision-making and actions. And I think that in a crisis like that, it's hard to find that space to reflect and to really kind of connect back to why we're doing the work we're doing. I think it also points out that nurses really are at the front lines of taking care of people who have contracted Ebola, and many of them will struggle with how to balance their personal risk with their professional responsibility. And I think that is a place where nurses find themselves quite often, these kinds of ethical issues, not often of this magnitude, but every day in their nursing practice, they are confronted with ethical issues that they need the knowledge and skills to respond to. So I think it's been quite an interesting conversation about how do we weigh the risks to healthcare workers, including nurses, who really are the ones who are in direct contact with blood and body fluids of people who are either suspected or confirmed to have a disease like Ebola. And as Tanner pointed out, this is a very serious, highly contagious disease. And so it's caused us to, you know, really ask ourselves, you know, are there certain classes of individuals in the workforce who ought to be exempt from providing care? How do we think about weighing the risks of personal exposure with our very clear duty to care for people who are in need of medical care?
And I'm curious. I have a bunch of questions for you, Cinda Rushton, but I'm curious about, you know, nurses jumping in to do their work when they don't feel personally fully prepared for it. We're going to come back.
Yeah.
We have to take a break, but we'll come back and I'll let you answer that and other questions, and invite our listeners to join this conversation, 410-662-8000. 8780, the number for Midday, as we discuss Ebola from the nursing perspective. That is Cinder Rushton, one of two faculty members from the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing we're speaking with during this hour. We'll continue the conversation in a moment, but first a brief reminder that Midday can only exist because of WYPR members. That's you. My radio colleague Nathan Sterner is here with more on the benefits of membership. And welcome back to Midday as we discuss Ebola from the nursing perspective. My guest in this segment of the show is Cinder Rushton, who teaches at the School of Nursing. She's a professor of clinical ethics at the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing. And, you know, Professor Rushton, I don't claim to have any exclusive insight into what went on at Texas Health Presbyterian, but there was one report that the clinicians, the nurses were learning on the run about safety protocols there. And so to my question, this presents an ethical dilemma for a nurse who doesn't feel fully prepared, facing something new, such as Ebola, the first case in the United States. That's a tough situation.
It is a very tough situation. And I think the response of nurses is often, I think, a reflection of a very core value in nursing. It's reflected in our ANA code of ethics, and that is that we have an ethical mandate to take care of all people who are in need of our services, that, you know, irrespective of their diagnosis, of their socioeconomic situation, their background, and that's our starting point. And so there's a presumption, of course, that we are going to provide care. What this situation sort of highlights is that that duty to care does not suggest that nurses are meant to be martyrs. It also really highlights that in order for us to fulfill that obligation, we do have to have the knowledge and the skills and have the equipment that minimizes our own personal risk and the risk to the people that we are trying to care for. So, you know, nurses may well be in situations where they recognize that they aren't prepared, that they are confronted with an unsafe situation. And just as they have an obligation to care for all the people in need of their services, they also have an obligation to identify unsafe situations. And I think this really points out how important having an environment of ethical practice really is, where nurses are both able to recognize those situations and they have the abilities, the skills, and the confidence to speak up and speak out when they're in a situation that really compromises both patient care but also threatens their own safety.
We welcome phone calls here at Midday. Please join us in this conversation, especially if you're a nurse and want to share some insights. 410-662-8780 or ask a question of our guest, Cinder Rushton. Professor Rushton, this is Kay giving us a call from Catonsville. Kay, welcome to Midday.
Oh, thank you. Mike, you're sort of addressing the question I was asking because I was curious as to the nurses in Dallas. When they treated the patient, knowing the incubation period is 21 days, I was just curious as to why they would go get on a plane, get on a cruise. Were they not trained? Did that information come to them later? It surprised me that they would be that public.
Yeah. You're speaking specifically of the case of Amber Vincent, who was the second nurse who is being treated in Atlanta now. And I mentioned at the outset of the show how her family had issued a statement over the weekend saying they were troubled by suggestions in the press and in the public, just general commentary in the public, that she had been careless because of her travel. Of course, she went from Dallas, flew to Cleveland, tested positive for Ebola after flying to Cleveland to plan her wedding, and then she returned to Dallas. And Cinder Rushton, I just want to mention the NBC News, in reporting about this statement from the family, said that the statement said that the nurse, Vincent, reported her temperature to health officials three times, and each time was cleared to fly. Federal health officials have said that she had a low-grade fever at 99.5 degrees and have confirmed that she was given the okay to fly. But to Kay's point, Why would you even do that, knowing that you're in that 21-day incubation period? That's a tough one.
Well, and, you know, I think part of the challenge here, like many of these situations, we don't have all the facts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's difficult to, you know, sort of stand in the shoes of another person who is confronted with these situations. I think part of the issue that I think we need to take account of here is, in order to make a good ethical decision, you have to have good facts. And, you know, there seems to be some question about what information was given in response to, you know, her efforts to try to alert officials of her condition. So I think, again, until we have the full investigation and analysis, it's probably premature to draw any conclusions. But I think what it does point out is how important it is to have transparent and full disclosure of what we know and what we don't know in these circumstances, both in terms of nurses and other clinicians making decisions for themselves, and also in terms of you know, what organizations' responsibilities are in providing an environment where nurses can practice ethically and safely. So there's a dual responsibility there, both the individual and the organization where they practice, and then, you know, even at the governmental level, what recommendations and responses they're providing in these situations.
You spoke earlier about the need for nurses to speak out when they see an unsafe situation, for instance. I was impressed by another nurse from Dallas, also employed at Texas Health Presbyterian, Brianna Aguirre, who last week spoke out about what she considered inadequate training and infection control. Among other things, this was in an article in the New York Times published on Friday. This nurse, a 30-year-old nurse, Brianna, said that Mr. Duncan, the late Thomas Eric Duncan, arrived at the emergency room on September 28th, and it took at least 3 hours to place him in isolation, despite suspicions that he had contracted the deadly virus. This must be part of your lectures at Hopkins, and a very difficult thing maybe for lots of nurses to negotiate, especially when it comes to countering orders of a doctor.
You're absolutely right, and it's actually one of the reasons why we recently convened a National Nursing Ethics Summit at Johns Hopkins, where leaders in nursing ethics and leaders from our major nursing organizations came together to develop a blueprint for 21st century nursing ethics. And one of the themes in the report centered on this very urgent need to strengthen a culture in healthcare that supports nurses and all healthcare professionals to be able to practice ethically. Part of that kind of culture is having an environment where it is actually safe for nurses to speak up about their concerns, obviously in a respectful way, but that their concerns be taken seriously and without fear of retaliation. So, you know, this nurse in Texas really, I believe, drew on some moral courage to be able to take that step, because it was clear in the interviews that she perceived doing so was risky, both in terms of her employment and in terms of her career. And yet, at the same time, she felt so compelled by the situation to take that step. I would hope that we would be able to not see that as a an unusual event, but that we would have a culture where we would expect every person in the healthcare system who notices that there is a breach in the way that we're implementing our protocols, in the way that we are even interacting with each other with respect and dignity, that those things would be brought forward and could be embraced in a conversation where we could actually explore why is this happening? What is it that needs to be done to address those concerns?
Professor Rushton, we're down to our last couple of minutes together, but I just wanted to ask you what you thought would come of all this. Do you think given the threats that we face in terms of, you know, further virological outbreaks or chemical, biological, even radiological attacks, because there's been a lot of talk about that post 9/11 too, that we may see more mandated drills, mandated training coming down from wherever that comes down from, the CDC, for instance?
I think that it is very likely that this is a glimpse into our future. And it is a wake-up call, as Dr. Venema highlighted earlier, for all of us to really take seriously. These are questions that we ought to be thinking about now. The best time to make good decisions is not in the midst of crisis. And so it's a real opportunity for us to take a pause, step back, and really ask ourselves, what are the hard questions that we need to be thinking about? How can we begin to address them in a more proactive way? What kind of training is necessary so that people are competent to provide this care that will be required? And how can we actually come together as a group of healthcare professionals and the public to examine how we can strengthen this culture so that we genuinely can support people to do the right thing at the right time for the right reason? Nurses are going to continue to rise to these challenges, and I have no doubt that they will. I think we have to really think about how do we help nurses and other healthcare professionals to honor their commitments to put their patients first by being met with really ethically sound policies that support them to fulfill that promise that they've made to the public. And it's an opportunity, I think, for some really important public and dialogue around how we want to think about responding to these issues, both in healthcare but in our communities across the nation.
Cindy Rushton, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk about this really important issue.
Cindy Rushton is the Ann and George L. Bunting Professor of Clinical Ethics, a joint professorship of the Johns Hopkins University's Berman Institute of Bioethics and the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing. That's Midday for today. I hope you enjoyed this program. If you have further comments, please email us at midday@wypr.org.